I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Really? Wait, are you...
Yep, it's Keenan.
Able to finish in person without starting the process over?
Really? Your info stays with you every step of the way.
Cool. Enjoy.
It's Keenan Thompson. Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really?
I'm Natalie Morales, and welcome to CBS Mornings On The Go. Ahead on this Wednesday, July 29th, a very tense hearing on Capitol Hill. Dr. Anthony Fauci faced questions from senators about the origin and handling of the COVID virus. But Fauci claimed his Fifth Amendment rights and refused to answer. We'll tell you what happened next. Then, if you feel like AI is developing too fast, you're not alone. Even OpenAI CEO thinks that's the case. We'll tell you what he thinks needs to be done. And as natural disasters become more frequent, it is time to talk about insuring your home. Jill Schlesinger is here. Plus, it is Shark Week, so who better to talk about the predators than the shark lady herself, a.k.a. marine biologist Emily Morrison. And we have award-winning actor Zoe Saldana joining us in studio. She's going to take us behind the scenes of the new season of her hit Paramount Plus series, Lioness. All that and so much more fun just ahead. And we begin this hour with a major announcement about big tech. It has taken over almost all areas of our lives, and that often comes with a hefty price tag. So Apple is now announcing a program that lets you lease new devices, kind of like you do with a car. It's called Apple Upgrade, and it applies to products like phones and laptops. CBS Saturday Morning co-host Kelly O'Grady has the details. Kelly, good morning. Sounds like a good idea. How does this program work?
So it's called Apple Upgrade, and I think the comparison to a car lease is a really good one. It's something that we're very familiar with. Apple is partnering with Klarna. You probably know them from the buy now, pay later craze. And you're going to see a set monthly fee for anywhere from 12 to 36 months, depending on the product. Your iPhones, your iPads, your Macs, your Apple Watches, they're all part of this program. It's going to start at $17.99 a month. And it's going to really depend, though, on your make, your model, your lease term. At the end, you're going to have three choices. You give back your phone, you walk away.
Right.
You give back your phone and you say, hey, I want an upgrade. I want to do a new lease.
Okay.
Or you make a one-time monthly or one-time payment and you buy it. But if you don't own it like you normally do. That's the important part of it.
So why is Apple launching this lease program right now?
Well, they want more business, Nate, right?
I was thinking I was going to let you say that, because that's what we bring you here for.
Well, really, the AI boom has caused a demand for more of the components of an Apple device.
True.
And so it's caused the price to go up. You've seen this with iPads. You've seen it with Macs.
Yeah.
We're expecting the cost of the iPhone to go up. So a lower monthly payment gets at those cost-crunched consumers that say, hey, well, maybe I can do that versus this big ticket price up front. The other thing is maybe it entices new Apple customers or the folks like me that just hold on to your phone for right. over 3 years because you say, hey, it works, maybe someone like me would say, I'm actually interested to upgrade your model.
To upgrade.
But very quickly, I mean, this is not cheaper than actually buying it, right? Because you end up paying more for the phone at the end of the lease. Do I understand that correctly?
No. Right? Okay. So let's take the example of an iPhone 17 Pro, yep. $31.99 a month for a 24-month lease.
Right.
By the end, you're going to have paid $770, give or take,
right.
versus $10.99, which you would normally pay.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
But you don't own it.
But you don't
so
own
I think
it.
The way to think about this is if you are going to lease, it's best if you're going to trade in your phone every mm-hmm. year or two or your device every year or two and you want a smaller monthly payment. It's better for you to buy if you hold on to it for a while
right.
and that resale or trade-in value, that ownership is important.
If you trade it in, though, you got to get all your data back, though, right?
That's
there
that
is that.
True.
Yeah.
That is true.
All right. All right. Thank you very much, Kelly, as always. Appreciate it. We have a little bit of news here within the halls of CBS News. 60 Minutes is welcoming some new faces to the reporting team ahead of the show's 59th season. First, a very familiar face for CBS Mornings viewers. Our very own Nora O'Donnell will join Bill Whitaker, Leslie Stahl, and John Wertheim as a correspondent. We are so excited and so proud of Nora.
Yes.
We can't think of anyone more qualified to be a 60 Minutes correspondent than Nora. Her high-profile interviews, ranging from popes to presidents, have already been showcased on 60 Minutes, so we are so excited to see her be
Definitely.
An official part of the team. Also joining the team as a correspondent, New York Times columnist Ross Douthat, whose columns and interviews for the New York Times are always illuminating. There are also a number of contributors joining the 60 team, including Sebastian Younger, a best-selling author and Academy Award-nominated documentarian. His work as a war correspondent helped shape our understanding of the war in Afghanistan and other conflicts. Emmy-winning journalist Gianna Tabani, who was previously a reporter at CNN and a senior correspondent with Vice News, and Trevor Phillips, who recently joined CBS News as a senior global affairs correspondent based in London. His sharp interviews are well known among Sky viewers. You can catch all of them on the upcoming season of 60 Minutes, which premieres September 13th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern right here on CBS.
Looking forward to it. Now to Capitol Hill, where we could see an explosive hearing today when Dr. Anthony Fauci appears in front of a Senate committee. He will face questions about the origin and handling of the COVID pandemic. Senator Rand Paul released more than 1,000 pages of revealing journal entries from Fauci. They detailed Fauci's relationship with President Trump and how he apparently reveled in his own fame. Caitlin Huey Burns is on Capitol Hill. Caitlin, good morning.
Good morning. Well, Senator Rand Paul is the chairman of this committee, and he has long been a Fauci critic. And this hearing is expected to focus on the origins of the COVID outbreak and what Dr. Fauci knew and when.
It's about accountability, but it's about also winning the ultimate debate so we don't do this again.
6 years after the COVID-19 pandemic started, questions still swirl over where the virus actually came from. In the thousands of diary entries from his time leading the government's response, Dr. Anthony Fauci recounts the debate over how it all started. In an entry in late January of 2020, Fauci referred to a wet market in Wuhan, China, writing, "Now we know the market was not the source, it was the amplifier." Having said that, somewhere the virus jumped from animals to humans. In May of 2021, Fauci addressed questions about the theory the virus leaked from a lab, writing, quote, "The very highly likelihood is that the virus originated naturally," but adding, "No one is 100% certain of the origin, including me, so I am calling for a thorough investigation." Something Fauci echoed that same month publicly.
Many of us feel that it is more likely that this is a natural occurrence, as has happened with SARS-CoV-1, where it goes from an animal reservoir to a human. But we don't know 100% the answer to that.
Republican Senator Rand Paul says Fauci suppressed the lab leak theory and alleges that money from the National Institutes of Health grant funded research to make viruses more transmittable at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, the same lab where he claims COVID-19 originated.
Why do you say wet market? Because that's an argument for it being of natural origin, not the lab. Why doesn't he want to be from the lab? Because he funded the lab.
Paul and Fauci have a history of contentious debate on this topic.
They're animal viruses that became more transmissible in human, and you funded it.
And you
admit the truth.
If anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
And as the pandemic went on, Dr. Fauci was vilified by many, including President Trump, especially over his COVID policies, including masking and school closures. Now, President Biden issued a blanket pardon for Dr. Fauci with the concern that he could be prosecuted by the Trump administration. Back to you.
All right, Caitlin, thank you very much. Joining us now is Dr. Celine Gounder, a CBS News medical correspondent and editor-at-large for public health at KFF Health News. She was also a member of the Biden-Harris Transition COVID Advisory Board. Dr. Gounder, good morning.
Good morning.
So Senator Rand has long accused Dr. Fauci of covering up the origins of COVID-19. The senator has claimed on national television that the National Institute of Health funded a lab in China where they were conducting what is called gain-of-function research. Mm-hmm. What is that exactly?
So gain-of-function research, we can use COVID actually as an example here. When we have new vaccines every year, we're trying to figure out, is COVID itself becoming more infectious, more virulent, and how do you have a vaccine that addresses that? And so gain of function research is you're actually trying to anticipate what's going to happen naturally. You're anticipating in the lab, and you're developing vaccines and antivirals and other countermeasures for what we anticipate may happen. So this is a very important tool in terms of keeping ahead of things.
And what do you make of the senator's claim that the doctor was behind the funding of the NIH funding and then covered it up?
Well, Dr. Fauci was the head of the National Institutes for Allergies and Infectious Diseases for about 40 years. Over that time, funded many, many different grants. We're talking about $600,000 between 2014 and 2019, so about $100,000 a year we're talking about here. That's what, a couple people you might have been able to fund with that? Does every CEO, does the CEO of this company know about three people paid $50,000 a year?
Right. Now, Fauci faced a lot of criticism when it came to his guidance for shutting down schools. Remind us what his role was when it came to those decisions, and then what are we learning from his diary entries?
Yeah, so in terms of shutting down the schools, look, Fauci was the most recognizable face of the COVID pandemic in terms of expertise and providing guidance. And he was turned to by a lot of public officials, Governor Cuomo, for example, Mayor de Blasio here in New York City. In his diaries, he documents those conversations and them asking him, should we close the schools? He said yes. He had no legal authority, to be clear. Mm-hmm. Those decisions were made by governors. And where does the authority to close a school sit? It's actually at the state and local level. So that was school boards, governors, teachers unions, where they had strong teachers mm-hmm. unions. They were the ones making the decisions.
So in Natalie's introduction, she mentioned that the diary entries sometimes indicate that Dr. Fauci's reveling in his fame. There is an awareness in reading the public diaries that he is very aware of his own public profile. So one of the risks, as you know, of celebrity in politics is people start making decisions with an eye towards the camera. Does that happen in medicine when a public health leader is being lauded on cameras almost on a daily basis? Does that influence the way perhaps a public health official or a doctor mm-hmm. makes decisions and recommendations?
So I want to say I've actually read all of the pages of the diary.
Okay.
So there's two releases, 1,100 and then some almost 500.
Right.
Most of his comments are actually about the pressure it was creating mm-hmm. and the harassment and death threats and what that led to in terms of security. So that's actually most of his comments about the fame. Who here has not taken a selfie with a celebrity who's been here in the studio?
Right.
And I'm not, I'm going to say it's basically everybody. Right?
Yeah.
It's human nature.
It's human nature.
To want to lean into the limelight.
It's human nature.
And he had it.
He had it. But if you look at the preponderance of his comments, most of them are actually concerns about this is making me really uncomfortable. I'm uneasy. This is leading to these security issues. It's, you know, the occasional comment about Barbara Streisand is not the headline here.
It's just, just real quick, Dr. Gounder. I mean, we've seen this debate rage on for over 6 years now. I mean, it's become somewhat political theater here. Yeah. What is the impact that this has on our public health system?
Oh, public health is devastated. And the massive budget cuts, we have multiple outbreaks right now, cyclospora, et cetera. This is very much a reflection of that, and it's just the beginning.
Well, these hearings have been explosive lately, and this one will not be any different. Dr. Gounder, thank you.
And we have a big update on the disappearance of a North Carolina mother during a Caribbean vacation. Elizabeth Waddell was last seen a week ago on the beach in Grenada's capital city. New surveillance video appears to show her entering the water, but it does not show her returning. Mm. Local police have also been giving more details of their investigation. Christian Benavides is tracking it all.
Newly released security footage shows a person believed to be Elizabeth Waddell walking outside her Airbnb on Grenada South Coast at 11:45 a.m. on July 22nd, before going down to the jetty near the property and jumping into the water. About 17 minutes later, video captures the figure swimming towards Grand Anse Beach and out of frame.
We did not capture on CCTV footage leaving the sea, coming back to the shore. And there is no account of anyone indicating that they saw her return to the shore.
The video was released Tuesday by Waddell's family, along with this photo. They say police are collecting security footage from along the beach and working to confirm any reported sightings of Waddell past 12:04 p.m. That includes a report from two people on jet skis who told local media they saw a woman, potentially Waddell, far from shore around 5:30 p.m. that day. They say they asked if the woman needed help, but she declined it, saying she was a good swimmer.
We asked her if she good. She was like, yeah, she put up she two thumbs and she said she good.
If it is indeed her, is that something, I guess, that the authorities would also look at?
Absolutely. You're following any of those, and that would be the last time she was seen, I believe. They would be a primary focus.
Lance Lysing is a retired FBI supervisory special agent. The Grenada police say the FBI is assisting in the investigation.
You're looking for potential foul play there in Grenada, suspects in Grenada. But then you also have to get a little bit into the victim's mindset here. Right now, it's a missing person. People go missing every day, all the time, for a variety of reasons. All of that is going to be looked at. And this is no different than a typical FBI investigation where they do this every day.
Waddell's family is pushing for anyone with tips to come forward. In an online message, her husband confirmed that she didn't have any of her belongings when she disappeared. Vlad?
All right, Christiane, thank you very much. It is time for us to look at the stories that caught our eye. And doing the honors today is the one and only Adriana Diaz.
Thank you, one and only Nate Burleson. All right, so we begin with the confirmation of President Trump's pick for Director of National Intelligence. Jay Clayton was confirmed along party lines after a hearing where he sidestepped questions from Democrats about whether former President Biden won the 2020 election. And hours before the vote, Clayton's predecessor, Bill Pulte, says he made a fifth round of job cuts from the DNI staff. Pulte claims staff has been cut by 30% in recent weeks. All right, moving on. eBay has reached a settlement with a Massachusetts couple after shocking and very disturbing behavior from some of its former employees. eBay will pay more than $55 million. You heard that right, to this couple who says they were harassed. They claim eBay employees sent them boxes of cockroaches, a Halloween mask of a bloody pig, and a book titled, listen to this, Surviving Loss of a Spouse. The couple was so scared they slept in separate rooms for a while.
Oh my God.
It happened after the couple was critical of eBay in a newsletter that they ran. Seven employees faced criminal charges. Some went to prison. Wow. eBay called the harassment, quote, reprehensible.
That
sure was.
Unbelievable.
It's true. Yeah, we covered this when it happened.
Yeah.
And listen to this. It's about school safety. There's a new tool coming to schools to help protect students from active shooters. Drones. They can flash strobe lights, spray pepper spray gel, and disable an attacker by ramming into them. The company that makes them says that they can travel up to 50 miles an hour indoors and 100 miles an hour outdoors. The program is called Campus Guardian Angel. So the drones are set to make their debut in this school year in some schools in Florida, Georgia, and Colorado. So tech is really moving into this space. But look at how they fly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary that we even need
them.
Scary that we need them, but you know, the more, the better.
Right.
To protect our children.
Yes, that's right. And finally, listen to this. Country legend Willie Nelson is taking a stand against those huge data centers that power AI. The 93-year-old took to social media to rail against the construction of one near his home in Abbott, Texas. He calls the centers loud, water thieving, and light polluting. Nelson wrote, quote, "The strength of rural America has never come from big industrial footprints. It comes from generations of people, open spaces, local businesses, and a connection to the land." He went on to say, "Whoever controls food and water controls the masses."
Wow. I mean, Willie, but this is in line with who he's always been.
Right.
Takes a stand, something that he believes in. That's why we love him.
I'm still thinking about that eBay story. Those former employees of eBay listed the couple's home on Craigslist as a place for swingers. I mean, they were out of control.
He said some are in prison, though. So
there were consequences. They were directed by leadership to go after this couple. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That's scary stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Adriana, you were talking about artificial intelligence. So speaking of AI, if you think it's developing too fast, you're not alone. On Tuesday, more than 1,200 AI workers signed a letter calling on the government to slow down development of the technology. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman is expected in Washington today, reportedly to preview his newest model. All this as the company grapples with what it called an unprecedented cyber incident. Jolene Kent has more.
Well, we had a kind of extremely sci-fi cyber incident.
That incident was a first of its kind. Last week, OpenAI says its models went rogue during internal testing, hacked into AI startup Hugging Face, and also compromised a customer at a second tech company, Modal Labs, according to Reuters. For OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, it's a scenario that has set off alarm bells.
We may have to pace the rate of AI development to give ourselves enough time for society to harden around some of these new capability levels.
It's a sentiment echoed by employees at some of the world's biggest AI companies. On Tuesday, more than 1,000 workers from companies like Anthropic, OpenAI, Google, and Meta signed a letter asking the U.S. to support an international effort to develop the technical and governance tools needed to deliberately pace the frontier of automated AI development, saying there's a real risk that capability development rapidly accelerates beyond our ability to understand or control the resulting systems. Although Altman did not personally sign it, his company, OpenAI, did come out and support the letter, which could be in part because of the Hugging Face cyber attack.
This is the first sort of security incident that I have felt very viscerally.
We sat down with Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei in February after the company refused to hand over their AI without restrictions to the U.S. military.
Give me one or two examples of what could go wrong.
One, again, is around this idea of reliability, which is just it targets the wrong person, it shoots a civilian, it doesn't show the judgment that a human soldier would show. Friendly fire or shooting a civilian or just the wrong kind of things. We don't want to sell something that we don't think is reliable.
We want to note that Dario Amodei there, he also did sign the letter to urge slower AI development. And meanwhile, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg, he has taken a more optimistic position on the development in AI. He wrote in a Wall Street Journal op-ed that concentration of power would limit people's abilities to choose their own future. He's taking a much more bullish stance on where all of this is going.
All right. So they wrote a letter. Is that really going to stop what we're seeing within this framework, this evolution, this revolution of artificial intelligence?
Yes. It sparks an important conversation in the fact that you have the Sam Altmans and Dario Amodeis and Mark Zuckerbergs of their world weighing in. They really control where this is going. But yes, the critics say it's power concentrated in the hands of too few people. Mm-hmm. And so this is just a very emotional debate right now as people think about, well, what's going to happen to my job? Right. What about national security and military capabilities, right?
And on the other side of this, as you said, Mark Zuckerberg, much more bullish on AI. He's actually saying that, you know, there should not be a ban on Chinese AI models. So, you know, where is that going to take us?
You know, it's interesting because we are in this really competitive race with China, right? U.S. versus China. And Zuckerberg's opinion is that innovation will actually drive better outcomes on this front. And so when you look at that from a different perspective, you can see why he might say that. But this really is, people are using AI in their everyday lives. What does this mean for security, safety, and your jobs? That's really what they're trying to do.
Bottom line.
Yeah.
Just the beginning of the debate. Can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Definitely can't. It is out. No.
Jolene, thank
you. Very ominous now.
Yes, I know. All right, well, coming up, how to prepare for hurricane and fire season. Jill Schlesinger is here with everything you need to know about insurance. Plus, she went from terrified of Jaws to now swimming with the sharks. Marine biologist Emily Morrison is here to tell us why there is no reason to be afraid.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas has styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
In today's Money Watch, we're talking about what you need to know about preparing for natural disasters, wildfires, hurricanes, and floods, of course, are becoming more and more frequent. Last year, the cost of damage from these events in the United States was a staggering $115 billion.
Wow.
CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger is here with more. You heard the crowd gasping.
Yeah, that's a lot of zeros.
There's a new survey, Jill. 71% of homeowners say that the insurance that they have has gone up over the past few years. How much have natural disasters played in this role?
I mean, it's very big, but also inflation. Because if you think about, there are three main factors. So one is that the frequency and intensity of these storms is driving up the cost of insurance. But the other is that building materials have gone up dramatically. That's a really interesting part of this.
I didn't think about that.
And then the other thing is that we, as human beings here in the U.S., we seem to be moving towards some of these most frequently hit disaster areas, like in the Southeast. So our migration patterns have actually driven up the cost of insurance as well. When you look at the cost of homeowners insurance, it is rising so much faster than the inflation rate, about 8% more from 2018. It's huge, and this is really putting a burden on folks.
And if you have a mortgage, you have to have homeowners insurance.
Yes, indeed.
So what is usually included and what is not?
Okay, so what is usually included is the cost of the building repairs, your personal items that might get damaged in a flood or, something happens in your home. Liability. Your dog bites someone in your house.
Yes.
That can be covered. And then if you have to move out, like we saw that in the California wildfires last year, people had to move out of their homes. So moving out and covering those additional living expenses, those things are usually covered. Certain things like damage to your car because of a storm, that's covered by your auto insurance. And one thing that I really have to emphasize, flooding is not covered by your standard homeowner's insurance policy.
That's a separate policy,
completely separate, run through usually the National Flood Insurance Program, which is a separate U.S. program. You have to qualify for it, or you can buy private. It's very expensive. And it only covers, and I say only because the average home is now $400,000 in the U.S. Flood insurance only covers $250,000 for rebuilding. So it's not going to get you all the way there.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the flooding. I was going to get to that. But you also talked about the wildfires.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We all remember the California wildfires.
Mm. Yep.
We recently had the smoke from Canada. Europe is burning right now. So what have we learned about wildfires and how to prepare for them?
So number one is absolutely wildfire smoke damage that is usually covered under your standard policies. But the most important thing to remember is that you want to review policies before something bad happens, right? So you pull that policy out, that homeowner's policy, you say, what is covered? What's excluded? Then the best thing to do, especially if you live in a high-risk area and everyone is high-risk right now, take photos and videos of everything in your house. You will never remember everything that you have in your house.
We did this during the California fire.
Exactly. And then you store it in a safe place so you can access it, right? You don't leave it in your house in a file cabinet that's going to burn up digitally on the cloud, protected. But these are things you can do now. And again, you want to make sure you understand what is covered, what is not, what's my deductible.
Right.
It's annoying, but you do it before something happens. Oh, by the way, you can't go and get coverage within 30 days of a disaster. There's usually a blockout period, especially for flood insurance. So just be careful. Do it now before anything bad happens.
We've been talking about homeowners. What about renters?
Okay. Renters insurance is so much cheaper because when you're a renter, you're not covering what happens if the building goes up in flames.
Right.
But you should get it. I think a lot of young people overlook this. Mm-hmm. So parents, if you're watching, be a nudge. Because the problem is that, in a general rental situation, let's say you're above your neighbor above you has a leak and it comes through your apartment and everything gets wet and disgusting. Renter's insurance, it's cheap. Go get it online. Be covered. Please take care of this. It's easy to do. Get it done.
Always great advice, Jill Schlesinger. Thank you very much. For more advice, check out her new podcast. We were just talking about it. It's called Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also check it out on YouTube.
As we continue our coverage of Shark Week, who better to talk to than a woman who's been dubbed the Shark Lady? Emily Morrison is a marine biologist, and she takes people on shark adventures and on dives to look for fossilized shark teeth. She also holds the record for the most shark tattoos. She already has 108 with plans for even more than that. Emily, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Thank you for having me. Incredible having you here. I mean, your love and passion for sharks, it really originated from a fear of sharks, which I think a lot of us do have. How did you come around to starting to love them?
So when I was about 7, I was shown Jaws, and then I definitely was very terrified to go in the ocean. I thought sharks were going to eat me. So when I told my dad that, he encouraged me to learn another reason why I didn't like sharks instead of they weren't going to eat me. So I went to the library and learned a lot about them and started becoming enthusiastic about them. Mm. So my dad decided, he encouraged me, said, I don't think you'd fear them. I think you actually like them. So kind of roll with that.
So much so that you became a marine biologist.
Yes.
And now you take people on all these incredible adventures.
It is a lot of fun.
What is it that you love about them and why should we not fear them?
So I actually have a fascination with the lineage or the adaptations and the evolutionary path of sharks. I always get really fascinated with the reason why sharks are the way that they are today, the different species. With the amount of diversity within the shark realm, it's never-ending information, so that's also a passion of mine, too. It's always changing, always learning. But also, I just... great whites were always a fascination with me and for me. And so for the fact that I just had my first interaction with great whites,
oh,
too.
Whoa. So, yeah.
How does that
this
go?
This is video.
Yes, yeah. There it is.
Oh my gosh, look at that.
You're getting all giggly.
Because they really
like you went out on a date. You're like, I got to tell you about this guy.
That's terrible.
But they were like in your face.
They were, right. Yeah. And I was able to help name one of them that wasn't in the database. So that was very exciting. Oh. So I'll get her tattooed and the other large one tattooed on my thigh very soon.
What's her name?
Her name is Carolina Ripa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, my sister, her name is Caroline, and she wanted to be a marine biologist, too, so we kind of combined a name because she was a spicy shark. So. Now,
you say that you want people to understand that sharks are just fish.
Yes, sir.
Right? Why is that important to create that like relation? Because people think there's fish and then there's sharks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Eating machines or something like that. Yes. No, sharks are just fish. They have no bones. And that's it. They have a cartilaginous skeletal structure, and that's what makes them differ than bony fish. But other than that, they're just fish. They do get into predator mode, so you don't want to see them in predator mode, and that's what makes them scary. But they're very rarely in predator mode. They're mainly in scavenger mode or kind of like a chill mode, and they're just fish. And so you just have to not act like prey, and they won't treat you like prey. And I know that sounds kind of funny, but...
So you mentioned something that was interesting. I've been a shark nerd my entire life, just like you. And one of the things that I think people will be astounded to know is because you mentioned the evolution of sharks is that most sharks, for example, we've got a great white here, their evolution was finished many, many years before humans ever appeared on planet Earth, which tells you that evolution has decided this is a perfect fish. Mm-hmm. No adjustments needed in something like 20 million years.
Yep. You are a shark nerd.
The great white has been an actual species for about 50 million years.
Yes,
and with the lineages, it's related to the mako species, the poor beagle, and the salmon shark. And all of those species are very, very well designed, very, very well designed predators.
And yet, Emily, we have never seen a great white mate.
Oh,
we've never seen.
No, we haven't.
Which is remarkable to me. Mm. And that's something that you as a scientist are still trying to figure out. We've seen some species mate, but not the big man-eaters.
That's what fascinates me, too, is because the great white can go into any water, any depth, any temperature. It has such a keen sense of like the adaptations and the evolutionary, it can go into deep, deep, deep water. So you don't know if they're mating in the depths. You don't know where. It's just such a mystery. And
I shouldn't have called it a man eater.
I got to ask you about the shark necklace that you're wearing. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you found?
Yes, ma'am. So I own a fossil dive charter down in Venice, Florida. And so I found this is a megalodon tooth. It's a little over 3 inches. And it was completely covered in coral. So it had been exposed for a very long time. And I didn't know. I just knew the shape. And so when I cleaned it up, it became one of my favorite teeth, and it's a little obnoxious to wear, but
and with the tats,
I love Emily Morrison,
thank you so much. Shark Week airs all week on the Discovery Channel.
Very cool. Coming up on CBS Morning, Zoe Saldana will join us to talk about the season 3 of her heart-pumping thriller series, Lioness. Stick around.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game-time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Let's hear it for the boys. Indeed, time for the stories that are the talk of the table this morning. Nate is leading us off. What you got?
All right, so I have a good one. My talk of the table is singles who are crunching numbers to decide if their dates are worth another go. So check this out. The Wall Street Journal, they published this article. Singles are so burned out, they are letting spreadsheets evaluate their dates. It highlights a new app called Spread that tracks your dating history and current roster with analytics on compatibility, patterns, and possible red flags. Listen to how much deep, where's the romance, as she says. Listen to how much of the detail goes into these spreadsheets.
They each have a nickname, their height, where we're at status-wise with the date in a drop-down menu. We've got the method of dating, their job title, the date location, the date of the latest interaction, and how are the vibes?
Tell me about the vibes.
Oh, my
goodness. It's not like it used to be.
Talk about lack of romance.
Oh, I know.
Let me see where you rank and put my glasses on my little spreadsheet here. Oh, you got a 5.
So y'all are not feeling it.
Listen, when you know, you know.
Thank you.
Right?
Yeah. Also, by the way, I'm going to talk a little bit about the growing isolation symptoms that we see here in this country. You know what you could also do?
Huh?
Talk to your friends.
That's right.
Talk
right.
to your family.
Get the vibes.
Right. Somebody.
But you can get the spreadsheet and then give it to your friends.
Yeah.
What?
I know. I'm just playing to do homework.
But you know where this comes from is all these dating apps. Everybody's swiping. So it's like, you know, it's like a job. So then I can see where you lay it out on a spreadsheet and you're like, okay, this one has that. But when you name a guy Penguin Man, what does that tell you?
So here's my question, though. These are for people in relationships, right? Whether it's short-term or long-term or you're married.
Yeah.
What if your partner gave you a performance review? About communication, about dating, or about your movie choices,
now, that would be an
TV choices, or even your performance inside and out of the bedroom.
Yes. What would your performance review be, Nate?
Oh, I'm going to be A++ all the way around. But I'm just saying.
I'm afraid to know what I'd be. Like, Gentleman C.
Gentleman C? You got to step your game up,
man. I'd be like, great conversationalist.
You're about to fail out of school. Yeah. All right, Natalie, what you
okay,
got?
Okay, my talk at the table, some unwanted guests in a couple of restaurants. The video is too good to be true. We had to show it to you. A bull walks into a bar. If it sounds like a joke, it wasn't, because this actually happened in Spain. So a couple was sitting down preparing for a meal and they simply froze when they saw. I mean, that bull came in charging, really comes in. So what do we do in a situation like this? Take a look at the waiter. He just casually says, ole, and he has him go along his way and walks him out the door. Then,
calm.
I know, they're pretty calm for that. And then in India, take a look at this. A chef was working his dough when he saw, he's not so calm. He saw that 4-foot crocodile making his way into the kitchen. The chef took off.
He didn't even wait around.
Dough
he was
on
like,
the
I'm
table.
Out.
Yep. Moments later, you see there are lots of workers coming out with their metal and wooden poles to guide the crocodile out. He's got a new name, yes. Dale the Crocodile.
Yeah, that's pretty true. That's some scary stuff, for real.
I know.
Okay, I want to talk about another symptom of growing isolation in this country. We are actually, believe it or not, we're talking less and less.
Yes.
There's a new article in The Atlantic that says that scientists followed thousands of people in the United States, Mexico, Australia, and Europe from 2005 to 2019. They found that every year these people spoke an average of 338 fewer words a day than they did the year before. Scientists say, of course, one of the reasons is technology. Ordering your coffee from an app, for example. I mean, a lot of people are also doing things on apps and on their phones that years ago would have required conversations. For example, the grocery store cashier that you interact with, the reception at the doctor's office. We book everything online. You don't even talk to your doctor anymore. You have to go through the My Health app, and that's where he gives you all the information about your physical. Yeah. There's very little.
You don't
little,
even talk to the receptionist.
You don't talk to the receptionist.
Says, go over there to the kiosk.
We shop online. We book on apps for restaurant reservations. So and so what are doctors saying? They say that this is having a detrimental effect on our mental health. And even the fact of talking to your friends. These are people that we don't know. What about your friends? We DM, we text. Right. If they call, you go, you know what? Text me.
Yeah.
It's a problem and it's contributing to our mental health. And this is just a byproduct, again, of the pandemic that's only increased in the last couple
Absolutely.
Years. Yeah, you're right about that. How have you formed the resistance against that? Because you talk more than ever.
I was waiting for that joke. I like talking.
And that didn't come from me. That came from Kelly.
I like to have chats.
You're making up for the 338 words that we're not saying.
I love it when you talk. I love it.
Mine is 338 additional words a day.
No doubt.
Our next guest is an Academy Award winner. And by the way, folks, she is the highest grossing actor in cinema history. Yes, I'm talking about Zoe Saldana, who is known for her massively popular blockbusters. Look at that. Lieutenant O'Hara, Gamora. I mean, she's done it all.
Just to name a few.
Including Avatar, which is one of the biggest grossing films of all time.
Of course.
Yes.
Now, folks, she is starring in and executive producing season 3 of the spy series Lioness on Paramount Plus. Saldana plays Jo. She's a program director in the CIA who leads undercover female operatives working to assassinate terrorists. In this clip from the season premiere, she meets a double agent from Ukraine. Check it out.
I understand for you, but what do we get in return?
What do you want?
I don't know. What do you do? What's your field?
Recruitment and infiltration. You know Honeypot?
I know Honeypot.
I hold the jar.
How do we contact you?
Give me your number. I'll have someone...
Not on your life. You give contact to me, and we'll reach out. Maybe.
And Zoe is here. Good morning.
Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Oh, my gosh. It's so good to see you. So, look, Lioness is one of our favorite shows. We're always talking about it.
Yep.
You are one of the... I mean, in addition to your film roles on television, you are one of the badass women, like, in all of TV.
Yeah.
But you said that this season was very demanding, and you weren't sure, after what we've seen over the last two seasons, you weren't sure that you would be able to pull it off. What does that mean?
I mean, I just feel like I'm an old soldier. I get tired a lot, but someone like Taylor Sheridan, when he believes in you, you have no other choice but to start believing in yourself again, you know? Yeah. And I love the fact that every season he manages to surprise us all with the challenges that he throws at Jo, at Caitlin, which is played by Nicole Kidman, and on Jo's QRF team.
Yeah.
We feel challenged as actors, as artists. We also feel like we learn a lot about the complexity of people who live in service, you know, to countries, but also to their lives. And it's insightful, it's inspiring, it's challenging. It's exhausting. So it's worth it. And the fact that we're coming back for a third season, we feel so lucky because that doesn't happen often.
And speaking of complexities, there is something beautifully poetic about your character, Jo. There's almost this irony because she has to disconnect from one thing in order to lock in on her job, essentially keeping herself and others alive. Are there aspects about your personal life that help you capture that duality?
Oh, well, yes. I think that as parents, once you take on the role of parent and caring for a life that you love more than your own, that means that their dreams sooner or later become bigger dreams than your own dreams. Mm. So having to wrestle and reconcile with the negotiation of your time, you know, the wanting and the needing and the having, you know, like, I have to be here. I want to do this. I need to do this. It's just hard when what the people that you love the most, which is your family, they're the ones that you sacrifice.
And she's really torn
with that.
It's
hard. It's really hard, right? And I think that we can all, if we're parents, we can familiarize 100%.
With that. And she's torn because love of country and service to the country are guiding her, but yet she's got her two kids at home that she's also grappling with how to be everything at once. What I love watching, I got a glimpse of the first two episodes. You really take us into the center of the action. I mean, and Jo, when I tell you that Jo is it, she is the baddest badass, as Vlad said. I mean, this is modern day warfare that we're seeing as well. Drones in Ukraine.
Pulled right out of the headlines.
Right out of the headlines. I mean, take us a little bit through like Taylor Sheridan's mindset in creating this season.
If there's one thing that I love the most, it's men that really see women mm-hmm. and know how to write women. And I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of creative men that that do that. Mm-hmm. You know, James Cameron writing Neytiri, I'm so forever indebted to him. Jacques Audiard with the women in Emilia Perez. Mm-hmm. And also Taylor Sheridan writes great, complex, wholesome women that they may not be perfect, but then again, you know, human beings were not made to be perfect. Right. And I love the fact that there is an accurate depiction of Jo, a woman that in front of her team, she never breaks, and she's able to carry so much responsibility on her shoulders.
Yeah.
And yet when she's in her private quarters, you see this human being grapple with just having to you make everything work.
So you make everything work because you are one of the hardest working actors in Hollywood.
God.
That is why you are the highest grossing actor in Hollywood in cinema history. We're so proud. The island of Hispaniola representing that hard work, dedication, paying off.
And Boricua.
Thank you very much for being here.
So
Season 3 of Lioness premieres this Sunday on Paramount Plus, which is part of our parent company, CBS. That does it for us, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.